They just flew off the ground.
Heaven forbid that he should have pulled sumo.
Yeah,
because that'd be totally illegal.
His stance was pretty.
That's illegal, man. That's not a deadlift. I know. I've been told many
it's
times.
It's cheating.
His stance was pretty moderate too for a strong man. Yeah. Like, it was pretty narrow. And Arnold freaking out in the background. You see that? Arnold like to the right.
The fact that Arnold was there.
Yeah, he was so excited.
Should wipe out any of this other bullshit. People should suck a dick.
Look for BSN products at bodybuilding.com. Alongside Silent Mike and Jim McDee, here's your host, Mark Bell.
Oh, Smelly. Smelly's just now getting his headphones on.
Hey now.
Oh, there he is.
Can you hear okay?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here.
Are you not plugged in?
No, he's plugged in.
I am.
He's plugged in.
I thought that was just
I'm
unplugged.
He's on a longer
plug.
On a longer cord because I had to redo everything here.
I'm on a longer leash than
just
you.
Just in case you want to run around. Yeah, I'm tied down.
We were talking about the fact that there's apparently a lot of controversy going on in social media over powerlifting right now, and none of us really know what it's about, nor do we care.
Now that there's so much social media, there's like Facebook, there's Vine, there's Pinterest, there's Instagram and Twitter. We don't know where it started. And there's still like some forums,
If it started from the bottom, now we're here.
Yeah, now we're here.
If there were powerlifters on Pinterest bitching about other people, other powerlifters is an issue.
There's
some
powerlifters on interest. Pinterest.
I know that there are. I know.
No, there's some interest in Pinterest.
No way.
Brandon Lilly checking out the new, latest recipes on Pinterest.
How to make your own curtains.
Sam
shit.
Bird on Pinterest. Yeah. Follow him, Seriously. He has some good shit.
I can actually see that one.
Yeah, he's got some choice clothing, some nice accessories, and some home project stuff that's very good. I highly recommend checking out Sam Bird on Pinterest.
I'm gonna favorite that one.
Yeah.
I don't even know what that means.
I've never been on Pinterest either.
And I'm old.
You are old.
Yeah, I don't know what any of that means. Pinterest, I don't know what it is.
I don't know what it's like.
Social media?
Yeah, it's a social media.
Ask your wife. That's
isn't there other similar new social media thing that's going on?
Oh, what was your brother telling us about? Meerkat?
Yeah, I don't know what
I've
that is.
I've never heard of that.
So Meerkat, it sounds
it just like announces
creepy.
Where you are.
No, I think it's a video. I think it's like a webcam through Twitter, which sounds really creepy. But Bohr's like, yeah, you can run it through Twitter and like just
you can do like a Q&A or some shit.
Yeah, your whole workout or something. I don't know. Bohr sent it in like an email too, I think, so that made it even more confusing. Oh, here we are on Pinterest looking up chocolates.
No, would you look at that? Dark chocolate. If it's dark chocolate, it doesn't add body fat, right?
Yeah. Antioxidants. Cancel that out.
Yeah.
They cancel out all the calories.
Helps with fat burning. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. He is there.
Yeah. I told you.
I knew it was going to be a selfie.
Ooh, look. He's doing like bedroom eyes down there in the corner.
Yeah, it's like curtains, dark chocolate, like fresh strawberries, and then fucking jacked ass Sam Bird flexing
he's
in the mirror.
Pretty goddamn jacked.
Yeah, he's huge.
I think, however, this is not him. This is somebody posting a picture of him that he posted himself.
Oh. Hey,
is
now.
That recently? He's huge.
I don't know.
Bottom right looks more like him right now.
This is, yeah.
Yeah, that looks like the magic.
He hit up
version.
He hit up a pretty good deadlift a few weeks ago, I saw.
What did he squat
in,
the cage?
Training? 900.
Yeah.
Yeah, he hit a 900 pound squat. Yeah, he's a strong mofo.
He came into our booth at the Arnold, and all of us were so busy. He just like started standing there handing out magazines. And
it was a nightmare.
He said hello to like nobody.
Yeah.
He just comes in the booth and starts handing out magazines.
I couldn't even wave.
Yeah,
I
none of us got a
wave.
Chance to say hi to him. So funny. He was there for like 15 minutes just passing out Power Magazine.
Yeah, shit was biz, eh? So what's the controversy? Fucking Eddie Hall wearing straps to deadlift 1,000 pounds?
That might be one thing. I don't know. It seems like that there's more than one thing. You got Brandon.
If it ain't one thing, it's a motherfucking other.
Brandon Lilly disavowing everybody.
I'll ask Kim right now because Kim posted about it. Twitter
Kim?
On blast.
Speaking of lifting straps, we got a cheat. We got our very own cheater in the house today, Chris Duffin.
That's right.
In the hizzy. Chris Duffin is one of the greatest cheaters of all time when it comes to lifting straps. 900 pounds for two, right, I believe, or 1.5 reps or something like that?
Well, you know, it's only like 300 pounds because of the straps. So.
Yeah, right. Deadlift bar too, right? Yeah.
And if
deadlift
bar.
Beard.
Sumo.
Sumo.
I didn't.
It was sumo?
It
was sumo, so it wasn't
security.
Really.
Security.
It wasn't a real deadlift.
It almost didn't even happen.
Basically, it didn't.
Wow.
So, pretty much wiped it off of existence.
If there was a hate button, I'd hit it. I'd hit that hate button right now.
That's what social media needs. Not a
sumo,
dislike, but a hate button.
What kind of person does that? It's so disrespectful towards powerlifting.
This is what's wrong with the sport.
I was trying to insult everyone.
It was just a low blow to society.
Don't worry. I've been told how bad this was many times. So.
Oh, okay.
Yes,
so
I've been.
So you're not doing sumo anymore.
Well,
and you're not using straps
anymore. I am a cheater.
There's
so.
there's a very popular YouTube channel that describes pulling sumo like eating butthole.
Oh yeah.
What's your thoughts
on
that? He said that everybody used to do it, but no one talked about it. But now everybody does it, and they're okay with it.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I'm going to no comment on both. Okay,
just in total fear that your wife may listen to the show. Just I don't know nothing about nothing.
I don't know nothing about nothing.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything. I don't know.
We don't encourage wives listening to this show, although we do have a pretty significant female listener.
There's six. It's doubled. There used to be three, and now there's six.
We called them out and said we only have three ladies listening.
All I know is you're not supposed to be sharing the secrets of the pros. So
right.
So no butthole secrets on here.
Fuck, I hate
that's
when
what
I
you're telling
this.
Me.
I hate when I share secret. The secret of the secrets of the pros.
Speaking of buttholes, we might as well start out with a poop story. You got any good poop stories to share with us? Any good blowouts of any kind, you know, lifting or otherwise?
I'm going to tell you a story.
Oh, here we go. It's been a while since we've had a good poop story.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
Hashtag poop story.
So, you know Justin Randall, right?
I love where this is going.
Sparky.
I love where this is going already.
So, I went up to Washington to do a meet, and I'm cutting weight because I'm a cheater. And we've already got that.
Yeah,
so.
from 275.
It was like 280, actually. But,
and you don't have to actually make weight because you know whoever's running the meet, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Use some fake scale.
My name's Chris, you know, and it's all good. Yeah. But so anyway, I'm cutting weight, and my stomach is bothering me, but nothing can come out because there's no water in my system, right?
God.
So I finish, you know, I go all the way, I cut weight, I get up there, I weigh in, 220 on the nose, and I go down, start eating. And I've got, you know, well, let's say 20 pounds of food and water I got to take in. And then it hits me a couple hours in. I'm like, oh, yeah, my stomach wasn't doing good.
Yeah.
And now I've eaten 20 or 30 pounds of stuff. And so that starts running through me. And now it's going through, and I'm going, oh, my God, I still got to do the meat tomorrow. I got to keep my weight up.
Right.
So I keep eating.
Did you take drinking. Did you take,
and,
like, a laxative or something to help you make weight or anything like that?
No. I think I had something right before. Like I said, my stomach, like, started getting in knots before I started the last day water drop.
Right.
And then it just couldn't go anywhere because I had nothing in me.
Right.
Oh, it went somewhere.
And so I spent the whole night, you know, moving 20 pounds worth of food through my system.
Jesus.
So I was up all night. Randall was staying with me. And I'm glad it was him and not my wife because I wouldn't have a wife.
Yeah. She'd be like, you know what, you sicko, I'm fucking out of here. Thanks for nothing.
By the time morning runs around, Randall gets up and he's going to the bathroom. I'm like, don't use the shower. Because I can't use the toilet anymore.
Oh,
just
my
so
God.
You know, I can't sit down anymore. I can't sit down doing things from a standing position. And so,
it's burning your legs too.
Like
much.
I said, I wouldn't have a wife. There was a very healthy tip left, so I go down to the meet, and I'm like, you know, I can't sit down. I'm pretty sure I can't squat 800 pounds today. I got in my truck and I drove home. I actually made weight. I didn't bomb out of the meat, but I didn't do the meat. That is a lot of product to move 3 years.
Up Schitt's Creek without a paddle.
Yeah.
So there's a good chance that Randall will never ever stay with me.
Yeah,
again.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go into details, but it was pretty low levels of depravity on my heart. So.
Man, if that was the outcome you were looking for, you certainly found a way to achieve it.
Kabuki. The Kabuki warrior fucking tearing it up.
The Kaduki.
Yeah. Holy shit.
Literally.
Brutal. But brutal. So anyway, speaking of cheating, you've successfully hit an 881-pound squat. In a contest, which is a world record and also revered as one of the greatest squats of all time, in my opinion anyway. I would say it's top five. I think you mentioned it was top five in regards to the coefficient, right? And just tell us a little bit about that day. Tell us a little about your preparation, you know, going into the meet and, you know, how long you've been powerlifting to kind of get to that moment.
Well, I've been powerlifting for 15 years and – training probably since like 1990-ish or so.
So it took a while.
A little while, you know. I love it when people
overnight sensation.
You know, yeah. People contact me online. They're like, "You look great," or walk into the gym. How long does it take to get like that?
Yeah, how do I get abs?
Is that like 6 months or like a
how
year?
How long you got?
Yeah.
A couple decades
of outworking everybody that you know.
Right.
But, yeah, so leading into the meet, I was actually prepping for another meet, and I really wanted to know, like, where my strength was with the weight cut. I just recently had surgery on my arm, so I couldn't deadlift or wasn't expecting to be able to deadlift heavy at that point. I hadn't been deadlifting in training. But I wanted to see how the rest of it came together, and I felt really good with my squat. For sure. And I've had that 4x body weight squat in my head for a long time.
Yeah.
So it's been a huge, like, you know, just big goal out there for a long time for me.
It was the heaviest 4x body weight squat of all time, right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
And so we're going into the meet, and I worked up to, on my second attempt, I think I hit like 850 or 860. And it was a little slow, but felt fairly good. And I'm like, you know, I know where I'm at for the meet. I'm actually done. So I walked over to my training partner and co-partner with the gym, Rudy, and I said, you know, that's it. I'm gonna pass on my third. Mm. He's like, are you sure? And I'm like, well, let me think about that. Because at this big meet, I want to go for the total,
right?
And I'm probably not going to be going for just an all out everything I've got just a squat.
I got you.
And
we always suggest to our lifters whenever they're thinking about bowing out, we always put a number in anyway, because you can always cancel it right before you go, you know.
So I'm sitting there and I'm like, if there's one time, you know, at the point I was thinking this is my last 220, you know, that next meet was going to be my last 220
right.
meet ever, because my body weight just has been continuing to climb, and so I went, well, this is, if I'm going to hit it, it's either today or never,
right.
This is my one shot, my only shot.
Right.
But really, that's what was going through my head. So I could feel the hairs on the back of my neck just start standing up. And then it just went over the top of my head. You know, it was they just kind of started standing on end. I could feel the adrenals, you know, kicking in.
Right.
So I had someone run up to the table and put in 400 kilo.
Right.
I walked out there. And that 881, I mean, it was a legitimate squat. I mean, I've had a lot of haters
right.
through my time, but I've had very few people that have ever come forward and anybody saying that was not to depth, that was a shitty squat or whatever. Mm. I sunk it,
right,
and I came up good, clean, and fast. And it was actually better than my second attempt.
It looked like you could have done more for sure.
So I mean, I was just ecstatic. I might even be more proud of my hops afterwards if you watch.
Yeah,
the video,
yeah, yeah.
You
know,
I got some big jumps in there.
I saw you jumping up like a maniac.
So when
you actually did the squat, you know, you said you felt fired up going into the squat. Did it not feel that hard just because you were so freaking fired up, or was it 881 pounds?
Honestly, I can't even tell you what it felt like.
Okay,
I mean, it was so just over the top in the moment that. I don't even remember what it felt like.
Right. And up until that moment, you hadn't broken an all-time world record like that before, have you?
No.
Yeah, so that must have been different.
Well, actually,
for you.
No. Well, actually, I did. So I had it already. I had the all-time for the squat at 860.
Oh, okay.
Which was
I think Sam Bird hit like an 854 or something. Then you hit the 860. Is that right?
Exactly. So it was actually the record was like an 815 from one of the Russian dudes.
Right.
And then Sam did a
USA, USA, USA.
Hit 854 in Australia the year before. He ended up bombing out at the meet, but his squat
right.
was in.
So it
went from 815 to 854.
Right.
And then I had reset. I'd set it at like 858 or 860 earlier in the year.
Sam Bird is an animal. Have you guys had a chance to get on the platform together?
We did.
Just in Australia.
We actually competed against each other in Australia. Sam was a big part of me being able to make my weight cut at that meet. So I had a lot of weight.
How so?
So I came in heavier than I expected to be.
Right.
So I ended up meeting up with Sam and Brantley Thornton, who had the all-time record at 181.
Yeah, he's a savage, too.
And
we love that name, too. Brantley Thornton. He's from, like, Kentucky or something, right?
It is a badass name.
Yeah.
So we all started cutting weight, saunaing together. And
I like where this is going. Sets a mood.
Yeah,
guys,
romantic spa in Australia.
I'm picturing you in leather chaps, losing weight, cowboy hat,
losing weight 10 cc's at a time.
Actually, it's pretty funny. There's this photo that just won't die, and my wife hates it. And of course, her whole family's seen it, and they love ridiculing me about it because I'm. Anyway, we're the three of us are down there cutting weight. I just stepped into the sauna, and I just had my skivvies on, and. Dan Green and his wife come down there, right. And I walk out, and next thing you know, Sparkle's got a camera and shoots this picture, and it's like everybody's standing there, and I'm standing in like my Speedo underwear, right. Which like my wife hates them, but I was trying to wear a minimalist underwear for cutting weight,
yeah.
And
fantastic. That's a good.
So it's
a good Google photo.
I think it's a really embarrassing photo for her anyway. I don't know. I don't care. But
that's great. But Sam was helping you lose weight?
Yeah. So anyway, Brantley ended up – he kind of bagged out early. He was unable – had some cramping issues. He ended up going up to the 198s. Sam was cutting to the 198s. But he was too much for him. So he stopped, but he stayed with me basically all night. So I ended up in the sauna for an all-nighter. And, he just kept me going, kept me motivated. And he actually stayed cutting weight with me just to keep me going.
Right.
Even though he knew he wasn't going to make it all the way to 198.
Wow. Right.
And, it was the first time I've actually spent any time with Sam together. And,
I don't know if we need to say anything more about Sam Bird than that right there.
It was amazing.
It was
pretty incredible. And I wouldn't have been able to do it without him.
Yeah.
And then so we ended up competing against each other because he didn't make it to the 198s. But,
that's pretty cool. But I think,
from that experience, I consider Sam a very good friend and
just
an incredible amount of respect for him. So,
From one world record holder to another, only you guys can probably really understand that high level. And, that's probably why he, stayed there with you, just realizing what a fucking bitch it is to drop that weight and to be able to perform at a high level.
And what is it we say about that?
Real, recognize real.
There you go.
Real, recognize real. We don't even know what that means. We say it continuously.
Because, Matt Vincent screwed that up a couple weeks ago here, so we're keeping it alive.
So you smash the world record squat, then you go into the bench, and you have a failed attempt at a 500-pound bench, and it gets racked weird, gets racked unevenly, and you smash your hand. And there's blood squirting out of your hand. Your hand's all fat and swollen.
Yeah, so I got this big, fat, swollen hand going into the deadlifts. And I haven't trained deadlift. And my elbow, I just had surgery. So I'm like, I'm going to do conventional at this meet.
Right.
I haven't pulled conventional in a long time because, there's no cheating involved with it. So I really don't want to be any
so
part of it.
What's the point?
But
it's sad that we even have video of you doing anything strong in a conventional style.
So I pulled 705 or something like that. Felt easy. Actually, I felt I was good for like 780 or 800.
Yeah, it looked very smooth. Looked easy.
And so I went out there, went for 748 next, which actually would have taken, because by that time I'm like, oh, crap, I've got to run at the record today now.
Right.
I only had a few fingers on the one hand and fat swollenness, so I kept trying to grip the bar to one side to offset it, and I was having grip issues.
Right.
And just missing it right at lockout. I mean, it was right there, and I just couldn't finish it.
What was that like, the day turning around like that? I know, you kind of mentioned it was just a kind of a tweener meet to prepare you for another competition, but, you have that world record moment, and that must have felt amazing. And then you go through some stuff on the bench press, and then you end up, here's a world record, all-time world record attempt total, and the motherfucker just slips right out of your hands. You have no control over it, just slips right out of your fingertips.
It was, and you can see in the video, I was pretty frustrated walking away from that deadlift.
Yeah, it looked like you were going to kill the guy behind you.
Hey, he jumped all scared, the back spotter.
Well, I was ready to turn around and kill the wall, and there was someone there, and yes, he almost got in the way of me and the wall and some killing. So, but...
move out of the way so I could beat up the wall.
But I walked away from that. There was nothing to be disappointed about. I mean, I did something that had been, You know, yeah, I've wanted the total record for a long time too, but I did something with the squat that was, you know, something I only dreamed of. Right. And so there's, you know, I could not be happy with that.
You said you didn't train deadlifts for that meet. Is that because of injury, or is that just because you were so focused on the squat? And what did your like kind of training cycle look like?
So yeah, I've got elbow issues. And that's,
yeah, we talked about eating M&Ms was a challenge.
Yes, they fall on the floor, and I don't know if you noticed last night when we were eating.
Show the camera that you can't put your hand up to your face.
Oh yeah, yes. So yeah, when we're eating dinner, there was a few chips and things that would miss and hit the ground. And my wife says I need, you know, a shirt and pants sponsor.
Yeah.
Pants for my up and down weight swings and shirts because I
yeah one of those trough bibs like they make for toddlers.
But so I've had surgery on this one and this one, but you know, we end up with so here's the issue here when I'm sumo deadlifting, this is how far away my arm is.
For those of you not watching on YouTube, he's missing a good 20% or so, or maybe even more.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like 45 degrees.
Yeah. Missing a large percentage of being able to get his arm fully extended.
So that's people, you know, they're always, you know, wow, you've almost doubled 900 with straps. Why can't you?
Right.
Why is your deadlift and meet so low? Well, when I have straps, it takes the elbow out of the equation.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I had surgery on the other arm just specifically to try to get it straighter so that I could go back to over under and try to get a big pull in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Which was an interesting conversation with my surgeon. Luckily, he knows me and he got it. But the rehab process ended up being a bit longer because they went in a lot deeper than what they normally would. So they went in and like pinned a bunch of nerves out of the way so that they could get in and remove a lot more bone tissue than they normally
do. Is it bone on bone kind of stopping you?
Yeah. And so I wasn't really able to do – I started deadlifting, but it was actually hurting me, which that sort of pain isn't actually really common for me. So I basically stopped doing any deadlifts in that training for that cycle.
Yeah. So how many times a week were you squatting then?
I was just squatting once a week.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So
you have some sort of nervous system disorder of some kind that you mentioned to me the other day that you don't feel pain or something like that. Is that – what the fuck is that about? Are you made of ananantium?
You know, I take a lot of flack for my all my shirtlessness training and stuff like that because pretty much
I like it. I enjoy it.
Oh, I know.
I watch it in slow mo.
Why do you think you're here?
Hey now.
But so in recent, you know, we only discovered this in recent years. But reflecting back on my life, I go, oh yeah, I remember breaking. Remember, you know, I was in fifth grade. I broke my arm, and I went into the office. At school, because it happened on recess break, and I was holding my arm, and I walked up to the nurse, and I said, my arm's broken. And she's like, no, it's not. Well, yeah, it is. She's like, no, it's not. I'm like, yeah, no, it's broken right here. She looks at me, it's not broken. You'd be crying. I'm like, well, it doesn't hurt, but it's broken.
Right.
I felt this now.
Yeah, it doesn't work anymore.
So they went and reset it and went home, and my mom gave me a half an aspirin or something. I'm like, oh, okay, whatever. I'll take that.
Right.
Need it. But so, you know, as I've gotten later in my lifting career, I've had these elbow issues, but no like real pain with it. I ended up detaching two heads of my pec. I've detached my bicep. I've had multiple surgeries, teeth implants, braces, like all this stuff, and zero pain whatsoever. I'll walk out of surgery and be like, I don't need this pain medicine stuff.
Right.
What's that for? And so anyway, been open some discussions with my doctor and go, oh, realize that that's, you know, type 4 autonomic nervous system disorder.
Right.
And basically, I don't feel what's called deep pain. So peripheral pain, like smashing my hand, that hurts.
Yeah.
But tendon ripping off the bone, joint issues, bone breaks, I don't feel that. But it also is tied to the regular other parts of the nervous system. So the ability to control heat, like I overheat really fast.
Oh, I got you.
Basically, I don't sweat. I do sweat a little. So the next step above this is the people that feel no pain and don't sweat at all.
Right.
So I'm like the step.
We need to find those people.
I'm the step down.
This is X-Men type shit.
So it'll be like 55 degrees in the gym. And
what if I lit your beard on fire?
It would hurt you really bad.
Yeah, I know. I could tell.
So
anyway, is, that's that story. Is the focus now, you know, on the all-time total? What's the focus? What's the motivating? What's kind of driving you now?
It is the total. So I'm trying to figure out, you know, how do I get around this issue with my arms? I've been trying to figure it out for a number of years, and so more.
You can bench press more, that would help.
What's that?
Huh? What?
I can. Yes.
I think you can
yes.
bench press more than you deadlift less. That's, you know what I mean?
That's
a hell of a concept.
That's what you're going to show me today.
That's what we're going to work on. Yeah.
I'll bench your squat. That's the method here at Super Training.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Yes, it would. So, yeah, I'm trying to figure out a way around that.
Is a hook grip an option, or is that?
So that's what I was trying to do, because if I can get that, then it takes the elbows out of the equation. So I spent a couple years trying to do that, but I do have a lot of swelling in my hands, and I think it's because they're downstream of the elbows. So, like, right now my left – so it's close to a year now since the left elbow surgery, and my left hand is still more swollen than the right one.
So the circulation may not be quite what it was before they started moving things around.
Yeah.
What if you got surgery to get larger thumbs?
Is
that a possibility?
Is that a possibility?
I mean, you just said surgery is not an issue for you.
Isn't penis size related to thumb size? This is getting interesting.
So a bigger penis, bigger thumb, bigger deadlift. I get it.
I will just put it this way. If you go to a hand surgeon and ask them about, you know, doing stuff like that, they might call you crazy.
Yeah.
I don't know this from personal experience.
Like, no, just, that would be cheating.
Can you just remove, like, I would like a 29-millimeter radius, like, right here. Yeah, in this
just a gash.
You might get called crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll try anything. Yeah.
Yeah. Fuck it. Why not, right?
So I'm still working that. Actually, I recently did a pretty dramatic weight cut for a photo shoot. For some marketing material, and just because I'm stupid.
Yeah.
For Power Magazine.
That's right. And
our next cover model, ladies and gentlemen.
The grip actually isn't an issue.
Subscribe
so
today.
It was, when I was light, it actually got enough fluids out of my hands. I was sitting there pulling 700 for reps and with the hook grip. And at the end, I'd stand there and hold it for like 20 seconds going, hey. Smack talking, you know.
Yeah.
Right.
But I'm like, it feels great.
But then your squat and your bench probably didn't feel as good.
Exactly. Yeah, so I got to figure out a way of getting those fluids down, but the grip isn't an issue.
Sounds like a fat guy problem.
Yeah.
It is a fat guy problem.
Fat, chubby hands.
Yes.
Well, all we did yesterday was eat. That was amazing. That was a great day of eating.
I sure hope that my diet coach isn't listening to this.
On the way home from here after a long day of filming and lifting and eating. I said to Chris, like, how are you doing food-wise? He's like, I'm hungry. I'm like, In-N-Out Burger? He's like, yep. Like, all right, that was an easy sell there. That wasn't too hard.
Hey, you got a bench press today. In-N-Out's the best thing?
Yeah, you got to get the belly to rise up a little bit.
A little bit of grease, a little bit of bread.
Get bloated. Get your bloat on.
I think when I've got my distended belly, it turns Mark on. So
it does.
Yeah, Every time it starts shrinking down, he'd be like, you need some food?
Exactly.
I want to see that bloat out again.
Fill that puppy back up.
Jim, can you get out the script? Mike, you have it?
No, I didn't. No, you guys didn't forward it to me.
Did you get the script?
Script?
No. Jim is always supposed to bring it, and for some, I don't know how.
I can tell you that this episode
is
going
to stick to it.
Jim
can tell the future.
On March 25th.
See that?
That's what I can tell you about script. That's what that thing down there is supposed to say, but it doesn't.
That looks like it's got like some football plays on it. We can run a sweep.
Actually, it was a concept for a podcast table. Oh. A little too round, but see, we're struggling with like we need a different arrangement.
Hey, we need like
here.
A V. We need the flying V.
Flying V.
Oh yeah. Hey now.
Mighty Ducks. You ever seen Mighty Ducks? That's probably before. You've seen it?
Yeah.
That's more my era. So
I've
good.
Seen Mighty Ducks. It's amazing.
It's a great. Someone asked us about a like best sport movies or something in the last episode, and we sucked. Like Mark mentioned Rocky, which is good, but we miss so many. Rudy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Everyone's like tweeting me afterwards, like, you guys forgot all. Like, Rudy's fucking amazing.
Rudy's great.
Yeah. Mighty Ducks.
I think we mentioned Hoosiers, though. Hoosiers
yeah, Hoosiers
great.
Is good. Yeah. Rocky's good. Remember the Titans.
Do you have a favorite, Chris?
Yeah, sport movies?
No.
Bigger, Stronger, Faster?
That is a good movie. That is one of the ones I've watched. So
there you go.
I don't have a lot of time in my life for TV and movies. And
did
stuff,
you play so. Any sports growing up?
I did wrestling, and that was the primary one, and cross country.
Oh, wow.
That's
a good
mix. I think I was the largest cross country runner in the state.
Yeah.
Usually outrun by the girls I was getting in shape for wrestling, and then finished off the year with track and
field. Did you grow up in Oregon, Portland?
Central Oregon.
Okay.
So.
Medford or something?
A little place called La Pine.
I don't know. Is Medford central or am I way
off? It's southeast. Oh, so, yeah.
I'm
You're way off. So, no, I was a pretty good wrestler. I started really, really crappy. I think my first year I lost 25 matches in a row.
Oh, wow. Were you into lifting at that point, kind of for the sport?
I was, and I was competing at 141.
Oh, nice.
141. I think the next year.
How tall were you?
Same height as now. Yeah, 5'9". Yeah. Actually, I was 5'10 back then.
Oh.
That was before 80.
Gravity.
Yeah, you got squished. You got squished down.
By my senior year, I grew pretty rapidly. I think I wrestled like 160, then 170, and then I went all the way through districts and all the way through state up to the final match without having a single offensive point scored against me. And then I was faced the three-time state champion, and I screwed it up in my head, and I beat myself.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Son of a bitch. You can't get those back.
No, you can't.
Motherfucking Seth Santos letting two giant bombs go right over his fucking head in my senior year. I'll never forget it. That motherfucker. I hope you're listening. I want to burn that fucking guy's house down. Gave up two touchdowns. We lost 14-8.
You had a Caucasian DB, though, huh?
Oh, he was horrible.
Yeah.
He was so slow.
Yeah.
They timed his 40-yard dash on a calendar. It was bad. The coach is like, he's so smart, though. He's in the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter. He's too slow. He can't catch anybody.
Doesn't matter when you play the city team.
Oh, man.
The inner city kids will just blow by you.
Son of a bitch.
They gotta be able to run
in
the inner city.
With that beard, it does look like you, it does look like you're ready for some ice fishing or something like that.
Hunting?
The thickness.
Don't mess with the Viking power, man.
Oh, hey now.
That's right.
The Kabuki warrior speaks.
Yeah, explain a little Kabuki to us. What's the Kabuki?
The Kabuki is just a nickname that's been with me since college. And, it's kind of a mental thing. Like a lot of people, I think, today in our sport take it themselves way too seriously.
We agree.
Yeah, exactly.
That, we do this for fun.
Yeah.
But at the same time, lifting in what we do is also practice for life. So, they're definitely very transferable skills. So you have to be serious. So there's a balance, right? And how do you do that? I mean, it's, when you want to get up, when I was walking out to that bar to deadlift yesterday, I was taking it pretty damn seriously. And that's, to me, putting on that warrior mask. It's like game time. Let's put that on now. But, me walking around saying, oh, this is, I'm a badass, or I do this or that, or, in the end, it's not a very important thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It doesn't define who we are. And so you've got to have that balance. But to me, it's, when things are important, when shit goes down in your life, are you prepared to take on the challenges and tasks ahead of you? So that's what the Kabuki Warrior is. The Kabuki Warrior is your ability to, to put on your game face.
Right.
That Kabuki, the face painting or the mask or whatever is something that has been around so many traditions,
right.
As they prepare for war, it's to
been around for at least 10 years, if my math is correct.
But go back to, tons. I mean, we do it in athletics today, but it goes centuries old of people doing it because it's what allows like the person that is a family man, a farmer that takes care of the part of the village, the community that is now going to go and become another person and, destroy other beings and protect, they've got to be able to have something that transforms them
right
into that other being. And it's, so that's what it is. How do you make that transformation?
That's a weird thing that I always noticed about powerlifting gear when I was lifting in it is that you do feel different when you put it on. You feel a little bit more invincible when you put it on.
You're that warrior. You're ready to go to battle, right?
Right.
You got your uniform.
And so to be successful, you have to be that and think that.
Right.
But at the end of the day, if, you see these people posted on social media about, their lifts and this and that, and, they kind of take that all the time.
Right.
Yeah.
A little too seriously. It's like, yeah. No. It you're really not a warrior on it. You know.
You don't need the smelling salts every day.
You're not at war. You know, war is much different fucking ballgame.
Exactly. And you know what happens in the gym or you know in your life is you know it's not that important in the end.
Right.
You know, if it is, you've got some things to figure out because you know if you get hurt and injured and you're done. Yeah. You know, what does that mean to your life?
You talked about being busy. I mean, you probably, if the rest of your life is really busy, you can't afford to have an injury or something that's going to take you out of the rest of your life as well.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'll tell the real Kabuki story. The real Kabuki story involves green alcohol. He had some green alcohol at some point and ended up with a green tongue like the great Kabuki, the wrestler, used to spit out the green mist, right?
Yep.
And Chris also shared with me a story that was very Goodwill Hunting-ish, where he would he was fucking lazy when he was in college. He didn't want to go to school.
Yeah.
But he would just show up on test day, and he would just look at the question, and he'd come in, and just right before class, he'd figure it out, he'd answer it, and then he'd leave.
Damn, I knew I shouldn't have told you these.
And so that's where the legend of the Kabuki Warrior first started to grow, I believe.
Yeah, it was. So,
I had to embarrass you a little bit.
It's a decent, you know, I don't share that story too much because, you know, I'm always professing about, you know, hard work and vision and, you know, all these things. But at the same time, that's what I was doing at the time elsewhere. But, you know, I started college and I went, you know, it's kind of easy.
Right.
Yeah. And so I went, started working full time.
Well, it's important to bring up because
I started raising my sisters I didn't even buy books. I would just show up at school on midterms or finals, take the tests. And, I had the highest graduating in engineering GPA.
Yeah. What a meathead. Huh?
So, but you know, I wasn't, you know,
sharing a sauna with a lawyer.
Yeah. Well, he is such a meathead that he almost missed his fucking flight out here. He couldn't find his fucking supplements. That's pretty bad. I'll catch the next plane. Where's my fucking branch chain amino acids?
They don't have any supplements at Super Training.
Yeah,
I went bombing through the line yesterday morning, you know, because the lady hands me the ticket. She's like, "You better run." Hands it to me. And so I take off running. And I get up.
Three fish oil falling out of your bag.
I get up to the security line, and I'm like, screw it. I just start running right past everybody going under the hoop. I'm like, nobody's going to say anything to me.
Probably
and I go straight to the front, right to the guy that's checking security. I'm barely breathing. And there's some guy back in the back
Why
of the line
so
back
red?
There.
You know. Let him go. He's red.
There was one person that said something. That was it.
Yeah,
and he's like, great. "You must be in a big hurry." Or that guy saying to someone else. I turn around. I'm like, "Yeah, I am."
Yeah,
and I hand the guy my ID and just went off.
Jesus. But I think it's important to bring up your experience in college because you're the kind of person that's really gifted at figuring things out. You know, you're good with your mind and you're good with your hands. You're working on when I went to your gym a few years ago, you were you building your own equipment. You had a bunch of your own equipment, customized things that I've never fucking seen before.
Yeah, I try to figure out how to perfect everything. I just can't. Things can be better. Like
right.
You said, my bench press, you walk up to it, you press a button, the bar raises and lowers. Mm. You know, nobody has to pick it up to change height.
It's on hydraulics, yeah.
And
really?
Yeah, so we've got...
That's fucking awesome.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
We've talked about stuff like that forever, that's the only way in my head. Like, oh, yeah, we could put it on an elevator. But, like, my head's like, oh, we could do that. But how the... we're not going to fucking do that.
Yeah, when I was at his gym, he had, like, some sort of power tool that he, like, stuck in the side of the bench and go... And then just
that's
thing would just
amazing.
Go up and then go down.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So now it's just there's a little handheld pendant you touch and it just raises.
You get electrocuted a little bit, but it's good for your bench.
Fun,
yeah, so. Wake you up a little.
It's
bit.
Good for your bench.
So
transfer.
So yeah, I try to perfect everything. Anything that I get involved with, I kind of take to the next level. Like I was telling you yesterday when we did with the interview, like when I lifted my tow rig. You know, I looked at all the lift kits and stuff on the market. That's what people do is they go buy that and install it. And I'm like, I look at the design and nobody out there that manufactures this stuff actually understands suspension design or steering design. So I had to design and build it from scratch because they're not done right. So now I've got this U-bin in my truck. It's bigger than hell, driving around on four. It
was impossible to even get in it. It was huge.
But the thing is, I can...
It's like getting a fire truck.
I can bomb, I can bomb over the mountain going 70, 80 miles an hour, and it handles better than sock.
Yeah.
And you're like, how the hell is that possible? That thing's taller than hell.
Yeah.
But it, you know, it drives like it's on rails, so because it's designed properly.
And you went to school to learn all that.
You know, there wasn't any direct schooling on suspension and
right.
steering design. So that was all stuff I had to learn on my own. Yeah.
It's just stuff you just played around with and figured out.
For our audience who does not know, what do you do in your real life other than own a gym?
Other than cheat with your sumo deadlifting.
Sumo, damn it. That's what I do for a living, is sumo deadlifting.
Oh, we didn't even talk about how bad you cheated on your squat. Your feet were out past your shoulders.
That's because I squat. That's a sit when you
No,
sit.
That's not a real squat. You got to go on the internet. If your feet are out past your shoulders, it's not a real squat.
Yeah.
So
the internet has to vote every
time. And what were those
squat.
Black things on your knees? I don't think those count.
Oh, yeah. You wrapped your knees up with some bandages
yeah, those don't
and
count.
Stuff.
Those don't count.
Son of a... You know? Just when you think you know somebody.
Yeah, might as well use that.
Did you know I had a belt on, too?
Might as well use that hydraulic to lift it, all right?
Oh I've God. Been told.
Huge asterisk next to this 881 now.
I have raw with wraps in the title of my video, and I've been told many times it's not raw because I have wraps on, even though they can't read the title, and you've got a belt. But so, Jim, back to your question. I do what's called operations management or running manufacturing companies. So the last 10 years has been like in executive roles, either like director of manufacturer, general manager, you know, those type of roles, but basically running all the operations. So like engineering, procurement, the production management, production planning, all those will roll up.
So a lot of balls to keep in the air.
What type of companies or stuff are you making?
So I've done general manager of an aerospace company for like 4 years.
Making like rockets and shit?
Yeah, what the?
I've done automotive a few times. I'm doing automotive right now.
What's aerospace? What's that mean? The fuck are you making?
Well, if you ever got on a 737, I've made a lot of parts for those. So,
oh, really? That's nuts.
So a lot of different industries.
So our lives are in your hands every time we hop on Southwest.
Not anymore.
Oh, all right.
So, not anymore.
Now it's every time you get in a car.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I've been working in the manufacturing environment since the late 90s. So, and then, like I said, just continued to progress in that environment and been working executive level stuff for a while. So, yeah, it makes training a really challenge because, you know, you go in and, you know, from a work environment, there's a lot of things that fall on your plate. You know, the performance of the company, everybody's jobs, like all these things, like... you know,
ends up being stressful.
It's pretty high stress. And some days you walk into the gym after that and you're trying to get under a bar and it's like, you just don't have the emotional or mental capacity anymore.
Right. You can't just change it. I mean, you can't just shut off what happened for the day. It's hard sometimes.
Or it's just, you're just depleted from it.
So, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stress is stress. Yeah. Not just, you know, training fatigue, but life fatigue.
Yeah.
It all dips from the same area.
Yeah. And that's one of the reasons I don't, you know, I get a question a lot of times, you know, why don't you travel and do all these meets and that, and I'm like, you know, look at the guys that I compete against, you know, none of them really do, you know, none of them really have families or jobs like that or the other thing, you know, it's like, I rarely, if ever, even know when I do a meet, like, that I'm actually going to be able to do it up until the last, like, the last few weeks, because it's like, and usually I've made a lot of compromises in my training schedule and all those other things, because that's not the priority, you know.
Right. I remember when I went up to your gym, and hung out with you for a day or two up there that you were at that point, like you were just talking about how much you were working 60, 70 hours a week or some shit like that, you know, at that point.
Yeah. So that was the time I just started working for the aerospace company and I walked in and I met the owner and he sold me on this story and I start meeting with the different customers. So Boeing was the biggest one, but there's a few others. And I realized, oh crap, they're in bad shape. These customers are actually about ready to walk away from them.
Uh-huh.
And this company is going to close down.
Right.
And, you know, financially, things are not working correctly. So it was a full hands on deck. I, at the time, because initially we were going to work on some projects together.
Right.
And I said, hey, Mark, here's some ideas. Let's run with this stuff. And I realized that I wasn't going to be able to follow through on those commitments.
Right.
And I think I told you so.
You did.
You know, it was full, you know, full turnaround mode. And I ended up having to bring that company and get it turned around and sold. To ensure that it was viable and going forward, and that everybody, so it was a 4-year basically, you know, turnaround there. It was actually 2-3 years turnaround, and then a year of basically prep and getting it sold.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that was pretty challenging to stay focused on my training and do all the other stuff during that time. And so
you were talking about college being relatively easy. When you were in college, what is it that you wanted to do? What was your plan? Did you have one?
Yeah, Chris, what was your plan?
I had no plan. That's a big lack. I don't know about anybody else, but there was no career advice or anything
right.
like
You're still working on a plan.
I am still
all
working the time.
Yeah, I know you mentioned that yesterday, but by all appearances, you're a pretty successful guy.
But here's a funny story, though. So I said I didn't go to, I basically didn't show up I just show up to take the test.
Right.
So I just picked a career. I said, I want to do engineering because I'm good at math.
Yeah.
It could have been psychology. It could have been a teacher,
Yeah.
Whatever. So I picked that. I go down to school, and they sign me up. I'm like, I want to be a mechanical engineer. And just random because that's what's in the book,
Right.
Somehow my thing got filled out to be a manufacturing engineer. And
whoops.
I'm like, well, the first term the classes are the same, so I didn't get up to changing my major. Well, then I moved off campus, and I basically never went up to school again. I'm like, well, second term, and finally
you're
I'm
just
like,
so lazy, you got your PhD in it.
So I ended up actually getting a degree in something that I didn't even know what it was to begin with, and had never actually purposely intended to sign up for.
There you go.
So that's
so you
pretty
sort of,
sad.
You
yeah.
sort of slouched into your profession, as
yeah,
it were,
kinda.
Into your career.
Yep.
That works too. Yeah. We don't often like to talk training too much because it gets boring with sets and reps and stuff. But
there are only five things to talk about in training. I don't even know what they are.
Yeah, I don't either. But your training is pretty unique. You're kind of on a auto regulation type deal going, but you also mess around with a lot of speed units and different mathematical things. Yeah. So just explain that maybe quickly to people how you train.
Yeah. So I use a lot of different tools. One to force myself because I kind of push myself really hard. Just in everything I do. So I actually have to have feedback mechanisms in place for myself to get
External.
Damn it, Duffin, knock this shit off because you're going to push yourself too far.
Yeah.
Right.
It's really helped me with my training. So yeah, I've used both the HRV systems from BioForce and Omega Wave to manage kind of my – how my body's responding, my nervous system response, recovery. But more importantly, actually, I use the speed monitoring device, velocity-based training stuff. So I'm actually measuring the bar speed, and what I like about that is I can have a set of parameters and say, this is what I'm going to train to today, and as long as I can do that, I can keep training. And
yeah.
That's my.
So you may have a speed work day or a max effort day or a volume type day, but you cut yourself off when you hit a certain dip in speed or velocity.
Basically.
Yeah.
So there's a few different ways I'll play with it. So, and I actually don't do straight speed training. I do what I call heavy speed. So
you do maximal lifts or are you pretty much sticking to these heavy speed sets that you were talking about earlier?
Basically the heavy speed sets. So unless it's a test type scenario, usually I'm doing what I call heavy speed work.
Occasionally you'll have to test just to kind of, get the information that you need to see where you're at.
Yeah, basically.
And when you do that, is that with a double, single? It just depends.
It depends.
Okay.
But how I manage the speed, I use it as another variable. So instead of just playing with weights and sets and reps, I can actually use that as a variable. I can say, hey, I'm going to train with 675, and as long as I'm lifting the bar, I'm going to do doubles. And I'm going to keep lifting until, as long as I stay above 3 meters a second. Mm. And so that may mean I can get 3 sets, and then it drops off. So next workout, I'm going to try to hit 4 sets. And next workout, I'm going to try to hit 5 sets,
right?
So I've made progress. Or I can say, okay, I'm actually going to train with the same weight, and I'm going to try to get faster. So next week, I'm going to try to hit 0.32 meters a second. Then I'm going to try to hit 0.35. So I've kept the same weight, the same sets and reps, but I've made progress.
And you're also improving your form along the way.
Exactly.
If your speed is similar, odds are that your form is probably similar.
And then I may take it another step and go, okay, I'm at 3 meters a second with 675. So next week I'm going to try to hit same 3 sets of, 5 sets of 2 doubles and stay with 685, then 695.
Right. Speed, a little heavier weight.
How do you choose the weights you're working with? The loose percentage or...
I have no idea what percentages are.
Yeah.
So it's way beyond my mental scope. I don't play around with percentages.
Yeah.
So it all comes down to a bar and how it's moving.
Yeah, and choose a weight that you think you can move that fast.
So I've got
is week one a little bit open after saying what you just said?
So, like I said, I could be picking from any one of those, and I'm just finding out where I'm at.
Right.
You know, establish the baseline and try to either improve the weight or improve this improve the speed.
Right.
Or, you know, improve the number of sets, right? So any of those variables allow me a whole nother thing to play around with. And then, yeah, I'll just try to improve it over a few weeks, and then I may change to doing a buffalo bar or doing it with chains.
Does video give you enough information or not really?
So once you've been doing it for a while and you know you've got a baseline, I can do it visually.
Right.
So
because what we see a lot of times in here, Jim, you know, obviously has been videoing this stuff forever. And what we end up seeing is, you know, a lot of guys are shaking and shimmying and all these different things on a walkout or something like that, or even just standing up at the bar. And you're like, holy shit, the guy's going to die. And then he nails a lift. We go back and watch it on video and like, oh, it didn't look that bad. Because you don't see all those little nuances in the video.
So, you know, when I don't need that monitoring device, but at the same time, if you don't have it, sometimes you always want it, like if you're doing speed training and you go, was that faster than last week?
Right.
Was it faster than the week before? Was it faster? Oh, yeah, that was faster.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You can add some weight. That was as fast, right? But if you know that you're going to measure it and you know you've got that feedback, that can help you be a little bit more honest and not have, you know, the scope creep.
When I think a lot of beginners, or I guess it's maybe by personality, but I think especially Mark and I are a little bit more like you where we'll drive ourselves into the ground before we'll underwork.
Right.
Right. So I lift 400 or even yesterday, you know, you were helping me with my form. So things were a little weird in the deadlift, but I grabbed 585 and I was like, fuck, that's heavy. Well, I've probably just been kicking my ass for the last 3 weeks and I don't know it.
Right.
Yeah.
Whereas if I'm regulating a little bit better, I'll tone myself back. So I'm a little bit fresher every week.
And so that's what I like about those other tools that I've got is you could look and see, oh, I'm recovering well. Yeah. I'm not. This is the day I should go for it. Or
you said you know, was it I'm HRV?
Yeah,
that's just explain to people real quick.
Heart rate variability. So it's a way of basically measuring your nervous system.
Joel Jameson
response. So Joel Jameson does the BioForce one.
Yeah, and just check it checks like your thumb or pulse or something in the morning. Kind of gives you a rating of what you're doing, right? Like a yellow, green, red.
So yeah, I'm trying to remember the science. It's actually been a while since I've read Joel's.
I think
book.
you pull a chunk of your hair out, right?
Put in a cauldron,
a blender. It's your first piss of the morning, right? Something like that, right? And you mix it with a blade.
Where's
of grass.
The hair come from?
So it's actually measuring the variability.
It's a pregnancy test in there too. I think,
So it's measuring the variability in your heart rate, which is actually telling you your basically the response between your sympathetic and nervous and parasympathetic nervous system and how they're balancing against each other. So I think too many people get caught up in the overtraining's bad. Overtraining's bad. It is going to downregulate you, but that's okay. If you're actually training in that space and still making progress, you're making progress. And if you recover, so as long as you know where you're at and how you're responding to that, you can still move forward. Now, so in that, if you're using that tool and it says you're recovered and you're not performing, now you've got an issue, right?
Right.
Or if you're continuing, now you're actually starting to decline, you know, you need to do something about it. So, you know, between that and then actually establishing here's some parameters and what you need to do with actually what the bar is doing today. So I like that just because it's, you know, it's prescriptive, not descriptive. So a lot of people will grab this.
It's results based.
So a lot of people take like let's do a small lab journey program or let's do a whatever program. You know, they don't realize that program was actually coach working very closely with an athlete over this 12-week period.
They're watching them 24/7.
And they're watching and doing exactly what I'm talking about, but they do it maybe visually or whatever. And they're going, this is how they're responding, and this is what we're going to do next week based on last week. And this is what they don't have this whole thing spelled out over this 12-week period.
Yeah, we tried to explain
this
that.
Is exactly what we're going to do, right? So now we get to the end of it, and they go, what'd you do to prep for that meet? And they write it all out. Yeah. And now everybody copies that and goes and tries to follow it.
And that's,
their that's not exactly how your body is going to be responding.
Right. Not to say Borisenko is not a genius, but if not everybody can just follow that program that's running around the internet.
Borisenko is a great coach and a great programmer, but that is
for his athletes.
That is a descriptive program.
Yeah, they probably sleep at his house.
Not a prescriptive program, and you have to understand the difference.
So it's retrospective. It's this is what happened, not this is what we're going
to
do.
This is what you need to do. Exactly. Yeah. Those are two different things.
Right.
And that's the big
Yeah, and people are like, oh, I ran Shaco and popped my ACL. Yeah. You're fucking training way too hard for your little body.
It's you've got to understand the difference between descriptive and prescriptive training, and that's what those tools that I use allow me to do is go, here I can take it and take a client or someone at the gym and say, I don't actually have to tell them I need you to do this sets and reps and whatever. I can say, here's your parameters. You can train within it. And it actually allows me to do prescriptive training without actually spelling out exactly what needs to happen.
Right.
So
you bring some of those units with you?
I brought one, yeah.
Maybe we'll dick around on the bench a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever played with one.
So
is it like an app on your phone or something, or to the laptop or something like that? Or how do you get the information?
Yeah, so I've got two different ones. One's called GymAware, and it's actually the more precise one. Mounts to the floor, and then you've got a tether that goes to the bar, or your hand, or dumbbell, or whatever it is. But it links to, you know, an iPhone, iPad, whatever. And then I've got a newer one from a company. It's out of Canada, but Elite FTS sells it.
Canadian? I don't want it.
Calls it a push band. And so I just got that, and I'm playing around with that. And again, it links to, you know, Android or Apple device, but it's it either goes on your wrist or your bar or whatever. So I've got that. It's definitely much, much more economical.
Yeah. I know there's a company coming out with one that's like a Bluetooth collar.
That's basically what it is.
Oh, maybe that's the same thing. That's the one, yeah. I've seen it on the Instagrams, but I haven't looked into it.
You also were using like apps on your phone or something like that too. Are those effective, or is that part of that system?
That's part of it. So the app is tied to – it's Bluetooth connected to the device that is capturing the –
And is it showing you the bar path and everything? It's kind of showing you all the different
– The GymAware will do that. I haven't played around with the push band yet enough to know the depth of
– Yeah, but main things you're looking at are bar speed?
The main thing I look at is velocity, yeah. But you're putting in the weight, so it's got power output. It's got you can basically know anything you need to know about what's going on with the bar. So there's a lot of ways you could actually look at your time under tension. You could look at there's a lot of different things. But I from that prescriptive model, I can't tell somebody I want you to have 2 seconds of time under tension with the bar. You know, if you want to do that, you can just tell them to count to two on your way down. You know,
Simple enough.
The velocity is that's where I use that because it's very easy to make the prescriptive training off of that.
So you said you kind of go each week. You'll either try to add a rep or set, kind of like we tell everyone, right? Do more than you did last week, and you'll probably get stronger. But as simple as that sounds, it gets hard. So you start doing 4 weeks, and now you're up to five sets of five at the same speed you are with whatever 675. I made that example, obviously, but. Do you ever take a deload? You said you switch bars
here and there. I'll just change up. So I'll work on something different.
Yeah.
So from there I'll go, okay, what's my overall weakness? Am I feeling weak in the whole? Maybe I'm feeling like I need more weight total, so I'll add chains. Or I may go, you know what, my work capacity's down. I actually need to get my work capacity up, so I may start doing sets of seven. Or do, you know, a really high volume 20 rep week, or
typically work out every day.
Or I go, you know, yes, exactly. So there's a lot of other things that I look at that I'm basing. So, but I'll bounce around, I'll change exercises, I'll change sets and reps. But it's all based on, you know, analyzing what is the next step.
Yeah.
What is the piece that I'm a little bit weaker on right now that isn't exactly necessarily always pure strength.
Yeah.
Right? So how do I take that whole scope of my training and not just focus on moving my max up here? But if I look at
boosting work capacity,
there's heavy speed, there's, you know, speed and hypertrophy, which is a little bit further down the paradigm, and then there's basically, you know, more just pure speed. So endurance strength, you not to where you're getting into pure endurance and you actually slow down. Like a marathon, you don't get you know, anything past that 20 repper, you actually start slowing down to preserve strength. So I try to stay within that paradigm, but make sure that I'm always actually have a clean focus. So unlike a traditional, let's say progressive, you know, linear, you know, standard periodization, I'm going to go 20 reps, then 18 reps, then 16 reps. Right. And, you know, what is your damn focus?
Yeah.
What are you trying to get better at during there? So if I'm
counting,
so with each piece, I just pick a certain subset of that paradigm.
Yeah.
So I'm doing doubles, or I'm doing five reppers, or, you know, I'm all the way down in 20s because I'm trying to – I'm either focused on speed and hypertrophy, speed, strength, or, you know, I'm working on more of that work capacity and speed all the way down that paradigm.
And do
the 20 reppers,
4 week blocks of each, and then kind of
it varies.
Analyze.
It just depends on what I'm kind of focused on, what I think my weaknesses are. So I'll take just subsets through that whole paradigm, and then I'm always trying to move that whole thing up.
Right.
So you're talking about something that's self-critical. There's a certain amount of like insight, intuition that comes from it. It's like, this has worked before for me. I need to go in this direction, or I know I'm lacking here. I need to go that direction. Constantly correcting, auto-regulating, thinking about it all of the time. If somebody is not capable of that, what do you suggest?
I suggest that they take a program that is successful, and they follow it.
Mm-hmm.
And they do it for 6 to 9 months.
Mm-hmm.
Then they pick another program, and they do that. And then after like 3 years, they go,
if they haven't figured it out how
to do it. What works right. well for me, and how do I respond? And now you can actually start putting those tools to place.
Right.
So you can't be constantly, I've been on this 2 months, and I'm not making, let's switch to the next best thing, the next best thing. Mm-hmm. There is no next best thing. The best thing is to figure out how you respond best to training.
Right.
And to do that, you need to pick a program, follow it to the letter, not changing it, whatever. Follow it to the end and do it for 6 to 9 months. Try something else. And then get some years under your belt doing that. And then that's how you learn how to actually work yourself.
Everybody wants the results like yesterday, and they've all been in it for 6 to 9 months.
Right.
Yep. So you've got to kill that training ADHD. So yeah. What I just described, that's probably pretty fairly high level stuff. That's
right.
People like me, they've been in the sport for a long time. This is how, if I'm training a client, this is actually what I would be analyzing in their training to take them to the next level. But, you know, if you don't have those skills, this is what you need. You need to get years under your belt and with a consistent program for a period of time. And take the ADHD out of it, follow it through to the end, and learn how you respond.
Right.
So,
you were mentioning to me, you know, I thought it was interesting when you're saying you do the high level of sets. You try to add sets per week, try to make sure you're moving at a similar speed. And you mentioned about the setup. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because you're doing many, many setups throughout the workout because of the high level of sets.
Yeah. So we take the heavy strength piece. That's the most important piece for me, right? So if I hit 5 doubles, and if instead of doing 5 doubles, I could have done 1 heavy triple to failure, I would have only got set up to the bar once. Like I would have walked up there, been mentally prepared once for that big heavy unrack. That
went
first
go through
rep,
that whole checklist first, of things
exactly,
that you need to go
all
through.
All the things like, you know, later we're going to film, like, what's the important things to squat? There's a mental checklist of here's the things. This is how I want you to set up. You're only going to practice that once.
Yeah.
You're only going to practice that once. And you're only going to have 2 reps that are actually the speed that you want.
Right.
And then you're going to – your third rep, so 30% of your training is actually not what you want.
And obviously you're practicing it in the warm-up, but it's not the same because you don't have the correct amount of weight on
there. Exactly. So that's my big negative with pure strength, you know, like the speed training in the 50% range.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You can get in and do it without actually prepping all the way.
Yeah.
Right.
Am I fully set up? Am
you
I mentally
give
prepared?
A fuck
am I
da, da, da,
am I this and this and this? And you're not, you don't have to be there because the weight just doesn't demand it. The
right.
weight doesn't demand that you have to be perfect, that you've got your mental game on, mm-hmm. right? So with those doubles, you're up there and that what you can only triple, you've got it. You've got to be set up right. So I've done 4 or 5 doubles. So that means I've got 4 opportunities for setups instead of 1.
Right.
So that mental preparation, that first one. And it means that my last rep wasn't what I wanted. So I just did 8 reps, though. So
right.
7 out of the 8 reps that I did are the desired speed, the desired, you know, that they're how I want them to be.
What about adding frequency in the week? I know you said you kind of deadlift or squat once a week, but if you double that.
I'm actually doing that right now.
Yeah, and get
so,
a little more
so,
of that practice.
Yeah. So recently, I increased my volume pretty significantly with the diet prep that I was doing.
Because he got fat.
And I found that I'm responding really, really well. I'm recovering better, basically with the, you know, the intra workout nutrition approach that I have, and so I'm playing around with that right now.
Yeah.
So last week I actually ended up, I think I had like 3 squat days in and deadlifted on Saturday, and then came back in and we deadlifted again yesterday. So
with the help of some whiskey, I might
add. Definitely helped. It definitely helped.
It helped a lot.
But so yeah, I think there's, you know, but you've got to decide, you've got to see how you respond.
Yeah. So multiple ways to skin a cat.
Yeah. So I'm doing it right now because if I squat a lot. So if I was to squat 2 or 3 times a week of the weight that I do,
right.
I think it would
800 plus, you'll die.
Beat the crap out of me, right?
Yeah.
So I'm doing alternatives. Returns. So that's why I've got a belt squat machine in recently. I can pump the volume up. I can do things that allow me to do that without beating me up.
Yeah, Smelly just got one. I'm stoked to use it.
So.
Yeah, it'll be awesome to have. We'll have huge quads, everybody.
Yeah,
that's right.
To get new pants all
big
around.
Quads.
You know, whenever I have guests here at Super Training, or where we have guests on the podcast, it's always interesting to hear, you know, everybody's thoughts on these different topics, and they end up all being very similar. You know, they're coming to this similar conclusions, just in different ways. Stan Efferding, former pro bodybuilder and a high level power lifter, obviously, he talked a lot about the core when he was here. And he talked a lot about, if he can do something standing, he'll do it standing rather than seated, to try to involve his stomach, try to involve his core more. Even just things like pull-ups and just whatever can involve his entire body, his entire system as a single unit, rather than just, hopping on a machine or just doing like a seated overhead press. He's going to try to go more towards the thing that's going to work your whole body rather than just a single joint movement. And when you came in, you mentioned the same thing. We had Dave Ziske, who ends up with a slightly rounded back. We had a couple other guys with some issues, and you just kept punching everybody in the stomach pretty much. That's what I got from the whole thing.
Well, I do like to do that.
So, what are some of your thoughts and ideas behind, behind some of this?
We are a machine that is meant to operate as a system. I mean, very clearly, that's what we're designed. We're not, we're not designed for this isolation-based stuff. So anytime you have a disconnect, things can start going wrong at various other points in the chain. So you definitely want to have system-based stuff. Like with Dave, we did some stuff. He was having trouble touching his toes. I think he was like 8 inches away. And I did some stuff that basically was some core integration stuff from the shoulder and hip,
right?
No stretching, and all of a sudden he could touch his toes effortlessly. We never stretched, we never did any of it, but I got basically what I did was some stuff that reset his body to work as a system. Just some technique.
Showed him how to breathe.
Some technique. So yeah, we did some breathing stuff, and so exactly what Stan says. Anytime that you want to do that, like I do a lot of stuff either standing or even standing and walking sometimes. In my training, even if you're doing, an overhead extension, same thing. There's no reason you should have that breathing, that pressurization,
right.
All of that intact. Good rib cage position. If you do that, you're going to have a much better connection as a whole. It's going to reduce your injury risk. It's going to have those muscles working in operation how they're supposed to work across your whole body. They are connected.
Even
you're
your
doing
invention.
Something, if you've got an issue with your glute, you may end up with an issue in your left shoulder. In your right glute, you may end up with an issue in your left shoulder.
Yeah.
They are connected.
Right.
Your right oblique isn't inflating. May end up with a glute issue or adductor issue on the other side or on the same side. It's all connected. And if those things, if you don't have the time practice making them work, then you get under a heavy load. When you need the system to work.
Right.
Like you said, you don't need the system to work when you're sitting there doing triceps.
Right.
But you need the system to work because we squat, we deadlift, we work as a whole, we get in and out of our car, we move for refrigerator in the house, we do that thing, and then, damn, what just happened?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. That's why. And your body, you can't let it forget how to work in that fashion.
Yeah, even with your invention, the shoulder rock, is when you hold it out away from your body a little bit, you'll notice that, it takes a lot of strength through the forearms, the wrist, even through your stomach. It's kind of a whole system type of movement. And, a lot of people are now using it and getting on board with it for shoulder rehab, but it's kind of working your entire body, right?
It is. So there's in the coaching videos that come with it, are based off of those reset philosophies and the core integration. And that's where the power of that device comes from is, actively mobilizing all those areas, strengthening while having that all tied into that core, which is going to affect everything all the way through. So, yeah.
Yeah, you and I talked about, you know, having, like, knee pain. And you're like, okay, well, we got to start with the way that you're standing and start with the way that you're sitting and start with X, Y, and Z. And you mentioned with your job that you end up sitting at a desk quite a bit. And with the multiple injuries that you've had, you've done anything and everything you can. You'll get up at your desk and you'll start doing some of the drills that you put me and Silent Mike through right there at your desk. But a lot of times when you're talking to a client or you're talking to somebody who's like, hey, my fucking knee, my knee hurts. What are you, you know, what is all this shit you're showing me? It's my fucking knee. I want you to work on my knee, you know? And so you run into that a lot. You know, a lot of people, they're not grasping the whole concept of it's a full body thing. They embrace the whole thing.
They do. I don't get a lot of that much anymore just because of the credibility standpoint.
Right.
People know that I know what I'm talking about. And so they'll listen. But I could definitely see that for a struggle for someone else that's just, you know, a trainer or whoever going, why are you teaching me to breathe?
Yeah, right.
I have shoulder problems.
Yeah.
What is this breathing?
I've been breathing for 30 years.
Exactly. It hurts right here. It's so bad.
Over here, doc. Yeah. No, right there. you know, that's so I could definitely see that as a struggle. And
right.
Like my doctor friends, you know, I hear that actually quite a bit, the whole thing. They're like, you know, they have, you know, people question them. Why are you teaching me breathing? The problem's over here. And they get that all the time.
Right.
So, yeah.
They don't see those things as symptoms.
Yeah, especially with a normal clientele. I think, like, with the people that we deal with, like athletes, a lot of times they understand that breathing is important. They may not know exactly how to do it, but they know that it is, you know, they know this stuff is important. So I think we probably actually get a better response than the people on dealing with the regular population that's sedentary, you know, sitting around Sunday watching football. And that's all they, you know, that's all they do. And they know that now they threw their back out. And
I think that some of us definitely have had the experience of being with a practitioner who is able to say, you know, you say, I got this problem over here, and they go to another part of your body, and they go, are you sore right there? And you go, yeah, what the fuck? And they'll, because it's, you know, once you've been through that experience with somebody, then you stop to questioning, and then you realize that there's more going on than you're conscious of, and that person has seen enough to be able to tell you kind of what's up.
So, yeah, and the stuff that I'm, the philosophy that I adhere to and have been trained in is basically saying, anybody that starts with the area of pain is lost. You know, but it's all about finding where the painless dysfunction is and fixing that. Because most of the time, this knee pain is because we're compensating. It's a compensation pattern.
Mm-hmm. You're doing something shitty
else.
Somewhere.
Yeah. We've got this issue over here in the hip, and maybe we have the issue in the hip because of the core or whatever it is. And we're doing something that's causing issues. So, like when I was working with Ed Kona a few weeks ago, he came out to see me for shoulder issues, but we started going through a lot of it. If you don't know, Ed had a hip replacement a number of years ago, and a lot of the issues weren't necessarily from the hip replacement, but the couple years leading into it, where he was using a
walking all funky,
doing all sorts. Yeah, exactly.
Those crutches for a little while and stuff like that.
So that's, you know, that's where, you know, that wasn't necessarily the pain. The pain was in the bad hip, but there was all these compensation patterns that were happening, and now he's experiencing pain elsewhere. So once we started working those issues, all of a sudden the guy's moving around like he's a kid again, and you know, he's all giddy and jittery because he's like, I can't believe this is, I move so well.
That's great. Yeah, he gets fired up. So you're an inventor, you're an engineer, you're a father, you're a husband. You got a lot of different things going on currently, but you know, I was really touched when I saw your story on EliteFTS.com a couple months back. You were talking about how you grew up. Can you share some of that with us today?
Yeah. And we had this conversation last night, Mark, that the story isn't who I am today.
Right.
But I'm trying to get better at sharing it because people find it inspiring, right. So you don't need this big backstory to be a phenomenal lifter or you know, do things in your life or whatever, because it, you know, it all comes down to who you are today. But but the story is a good one. So I grew up with some unconventional parents, and through high, by the time I graduated high school, I'd lived half my life being homeless. So we basically lived in the woods. There was, I was telling you a story yesterday, which we missed last night, that missed in the interview yesterday. But, you know, there was a time we were, it was in Northern California. We were up in the mountains as usual, and there was rattlesnake dens around. So we had, lashed up poles into the trees, and we were sleeping up,
sounds terrifying.
up in the trees to keep yeah. away from the rattlesnakes. My mom was pregnant at the time with my second oldest sister, and we didn't have transportation because, you know, we were just up there, and right. She ended up having to flag down a dump truck that was coming out of the mountains, and so she rode in the back of this dump truck, bouncing around all the way down into town to the hospital. Jesus, so she got the dump truck pulled up to the hospital, and she hops yeah. out of the back of the dump truck, and has our sister gets I don't remember, I was too young, I don't remember how she got back up in
right.
the mountains, but you know, she's up there feeding my sister, and right. There's this rattlesnake coiled up behind her.
Jesus.
Oh my God.
So
why does it have to be snakes?
By the way, that's when I was taught to how to catch and kill rattlesnakes at that age too. So
yeah, I can imagine.
The alligator, yeah, rattlesnake hunter.
But there you go. So yeah, we spent a lot of time. I mean, that was our growing up. So, you know, there was a lot of poaching of animals and foraging for mushrooms and just very, very unconventional living. And we did get taken by the state for a while, spent some time in foster care, and then ended up restarting up in Oregon. So we had a year kind of a stability and then kind of fallen back into old habits. And we ended up back up in the mountains out in eastern Oregon, doing some mining and logging and stuff like that. And, you know, it was just, again, it's a lot different than I think, at least what I see today. Like my wife teaches in a very poverty-driven school, but everybody, like, I've gone and spoken to the classes and stuff, and they're all dressed nice and doing right. this. I'm like, we grew up, I mean, we wore dirty clothes.
You're like,
we
you
had
ain't
nowhere
that
to
poor.
Wash it. We had, yeah. you know, we once a week we'd fill up our jugs of water in the stream and set them out and on the rocks and heat up
right.
in the sun and dump it over mm-hmm. your head for your shower. And you know, during the winter, we'd usually find some houses down in town. Sometimes it was like there was a couple years we all lived in. I had three sisters and myself, and I've got a brother too, but he wasn't with us at the time. All living out of a 16-foot trailer, which if you don't, that's basically about the size of this space here.
Right.
This is our living space in the dead of winter in Oregon in a couple feet of snow. Usually I was sleeping in the back of a pickup truck with in the
– Yeah, when you were mentioning
in a sleeping bag freezing my ass off.
You were mentioning, you know, living in the woods. Were you guys finding some sort of shelter? I mean, it must be cold and rainy and so on, right?
So yeah, I mean, a lot of that living in the woods time was during the summer. So we'd be, okay. you know, we'd be in tents, or like I said, you know, there was a couple years we had that little trailer, and I was sleeping in the back of the truck through the winters. During the winter, a lot of times we would move into town because you know we're going to school or whatever. But oftentimes it was a place with, you know, no running water, no electricity. Like in California, I'll have to give you the picture. There's a good one. I want to go back there sometime, but, you know, this, you know, abandoned houses, things like that, you know, maybe mm-hmm. no, you know, so it was, it varied around,
right.
you know, sometimes they were places that we had electricity.
Were there times where you just recognized like, holy shit, this fucking sucks? Or was it just the way you grew up?
It was just the way we grew up. It actually wasn't bad. You know, there was nothing, right. it just was.
Was it a product of a compulsion about, like, your parents wanting to be off the grid or self-sustainable or what? I mean,
they,
just out of curiosity.
Parents
what was...
were very intellectual, but just not grasping, you know, not wanting to be part of society for some other reasons that I don't think it's appropriate at this time
yeah.
to get into. But like when we were in Northern California, I mean, that's, you know, we were up in the Trinity Wilderness, which is like right next to Humboldt County, but further in.
Is that like
so,
Shasta?
Yeah.
Kind
further
of.
West, a little bit further west of that. But, you know what people in the Humboldt area do for a living in the woods, right?
Yep.
So that's, you know, why we were taken by the state.
Right.
You know, when we moved to Oregon, you know, that ended. And, but yeah, there was a lot of drug and alcohol, you know, problems. So it wasn't the best environment. And in fact, so like I said, you know, I did well in, I was pretty intellectual. I did well in school. Mm-hmm. Although I was told I was retarded when I was, I don't think I told you that story, Mark. I was held back in like first or second grade.
I could understand that.
I was different. I was told I had learning disabilities and whatnot.
Right.
But, you know, later on kind of, yeah, things changed.
Do you think you learned a lot from, I mean, you know, you're living out in the woods. Meanwhile, you know, I'm a fucking fat kid in Poughkeepsie worrying about what Nintendo video game I'm playing and eating Doritos and stuff like that. You think you living in the woods and growing up in the environment that you grew up in, you think you learned a lot?
I think it helped definitely develop my work ethic. I mean, my parents were always working. Very manual
always
stuff.
To be done,
always,
right?
And I was always put to work. So, so. You know, if they were cutting firewood, I was chopping firewood. You know, if they were
so your physical training started at 4 years old.
Yeah, if we were hauling water out to remote areas that needed water, I was hauling water out. And you know, when we moved to Oregon, they got into mining. You know, so I was 100, 200 pound pack of rocks on my back up the side of the hill.
Yeah.
You know, day in, day out. You know, during the summers.
And you guys are roughly the same age, right?
Yeah. And so anyway, when I went to college, you know, things at home really deteriorated, and that's where a couple years in, I ended up taking custody of my three younger siblings and pulling them out of that environment. Mm. And ended up raising all them through their teenage years while I finished my engineering degree and my master's and kind of sorted things out in my own life as well, working through my own little demons and whatnot
right.
stuff. So.
When you were younger, you know, was there ever a time where you, you know, you're at school and, you know, a buddy, you know, invites you over to the house or something like that, and you go over to their home and you see they have shit's different there?
Yeah. And so.
Like, holy shit, you got fucking brownies in the cupboard. What the fuck?
Yeah.
So what is this about?
That happened in first grade. I made some friends and. One of my friends, I started staying at his house. I'm like, this is awesome. So I'm like every day, hey, I'd walk up. My parents would come to pick me up and I'd be like, I'm going to stay at my friend's house. And I think I started doing that too frequently.
Right.
And
they had this thing called Pop-Tarts.
And so actually it ended up being it's kind of a pretty sad story because, you know, I'd stayed at like my friend's house for 7 days in a row. And my parents, you can't stay there. You know, you've got to come home. And I don't want to, and I threw a big fit, and that night, my friend's house burnt down, and his whole family died. So that definitely, you know, combined with the other things helped, you know, I was a very quiet kid, and I don't think my mom says I didn't talk for a year after that.
You're so, still kind of weird.
I am a little weird.
Just to give you an update.
But
that's why we love you here at Super Training.
So that pulled on for a few years, and then similar thing happened actually again to me, like in fifth grade. So this is the year we moved back to Oregon and had some stability, and it was the year I was telling about my arm break story, saying, "Hey, I broke my arm," and went to the nurse.
Right.
After we got the cast on, after my mom had actually show up at school and pick me up and take me to the hospital to get the foam reset because they never believed me. So my friend actually he would do all the transcribing and sit next to me in school every day, writing everything out for me. And then he died. So that was,
shit.
Yeah. So I had a lot of things like that. And, you know,
is it ever like a driving force behind anything? You know, your ability, you know, to raise your own children or, you knocking out world records and kicking a lot of ass. Is it kind of like a statement like, you know, just to kind of, you know, prove to yourself almost, you know?
I'm a very driven person, and I think that, you know, there's certainly a piece of that that's pulled into that. But, you know, my siblings are not driven in the same fashion I am. But, you know, and they've been through the same experiences as well. So, and, you know, I've certainly met many other people like yourself that are very driven that don't have that background, right?
Right.
And so it's certainly something that I can use when I've been in tough situations going, you know, this is nothing. Right. You know, I've been through the fire. Yeah. I've walked through the fire. You know, I've been through more challenging shit than this.
Right.
But at the same time, you know, like I said earlier, that story's the past. That's not who I am right. today. And, you know, I know other people that have been strong people in the past, and today they're, you know, 20 years later,
yeah,
they're weak-willed.
Right.
And, you know, the past is the past. And, you know, what defines you is right now. You are only defined today, right now, this second. And so you've always got to ask yourself, who are you right now?
Right.
And, you know, anybody, that same question. So you don't need, you know, this powerful backstory or this other, but it's also important to know that, you know, no matter, you can have those challenges, and it doesn't have to define you or bring you down either. And I think that's the power of that story.
Yeah,
but you don't need that story to say, hey, I don't have that story to be a motivated person.
Well, right.
Fucking bullshit. Okay.
Right. Whenever I talk to people who have, you know, rough backstories, or they're going through a particularly bad time at the moment, and things particularly not their fault, just shit happens to them, I often kind of say, like, give yourself a point at which you're going to dismiss yourself from the victim part of this and just say, okay, that was an experience.
And be a functioning human being.
Yeah, exactly. Go on and be a functioning human being.
Right.
Because it's very easy to fall into that victim trap. It's like, all this shit happened to me, so I don't ever have to accomplish anything because I was, you know, I was handicapped from the beginning by this or that or the other thing. Right. You know?
Exactly. And I think that's something that I've done, is I've never been that victim. And like we talked about, like my hand issues earlier, hold me back from the deadlift. That's not an excuse.
Right.
I'm like, I'm always just, how do I figure this out? Do we go to the hook grip? Do I figure out a surgeon? Do it? It's like
surgeon and long thumb. We figured it out. I'll get you a surgeon.
He's got like a big giant hairy ape thumb or some shit.
You know, there's a difference sticking between, you know, stating fact and where you're going.
Right.
And,
Well, yesterday when you came in, you were talking about how it had not been a good day. Now, you and I have known each other for several years, but we don't talk a lot. You came in and said, you know, it's been a rough day. I said, well, what happened? And you just laid it out, and you took responsibility for the things that were your things, and you weren't making excuses for yourself or the situation or anything like that. You just laid it out, and I thought, that is how people need to think more often, not looking for somebody to blame things on. Just own it and go forward, and it's like, how do I fix it? How do I change these behaviors in the future? Whatever, you know, whatever it is. I was super impressed by that. Just bowled me over.
Oh, thank you.
Welcome.
I forgot about that, actually.
So, he's a problem solver.
Yeah, you have to always be focused on how you're moving forward.
Right.
What's the game plan? And you've got to be willing to accept. I mean, if you can't take the failures or faults yourself, you're never going to grow. Right. And, you know, I joke around a lot in my gym, and people around me that know me, you know, oh, I squat so much because I walk around because I got this big giant ego, you know.
Right.
But in the end, you know, I'm proud of what I've accomplished, so maybe there is some ego there. But at the same time, I'm very open to my fallibility, my faults, my failings.
Right.
And there's a lot of things I do wrong all the time, and I own up to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one thing that's made me a good leader as well. And, you know, people know that I speak with authenticity in the work that I do. But when I'm at fault, I'll say, this is me. I'm wrong. And
yeah,
this is where we're moving. And
well, one thing that people don't understand about being a leader is sometimes you're making a decision based on almost no information, and yet a decision has to be made. You have to tell people to do this, that, or the other thing. So some of the time you're just going to fucking be wrong.
Exactly.
And you just have to own it and move on. That's all you can do.
Yeah.
All right, man. Well, I think that's pretty much it for today. Where can people find you? And also, where can people check out more information on your shoulder rock?
So definitely need to go to kabukiwarrior.com. I've got my blog there. I've got the shop with the shoulder rock on it.
That's where you have a lot of your YouTube stuff as well.
So there's links to your YouTube. So my YouTube channel itself is kabuki07. I'm on Instagram at kabuki_strong, Twitter, kabukistrong. And, yeah, I think there should be links to all that on the website.
And you're also on Elite FTS, right?
I am on Elite FTS.
What's your middle name, your favorite color, and your favorite song? That's pretty much it for today. Multiply your hustle, multiply your muscle, and may all your shits be tapered. I'm at Mark Smelly Bell on Twitter and Instagrams.
You can find me at Silent Mike with 2 Ks, and the new sign-off is...
Stay healthy.
Stay healthy. I'm Jim McDee.
Matt Vincent, he's so stupid, he made that up, so I had to steal it.
I'm Jim McDee, SCTV, everywhere that I would want you to find me. Follow the show on Instagram, at Mark Bell's Powercast, Twitter, at SGJimSack, Facebook.com.
Is anybody still listening?
/ Supertraining Jim, and visit the website, supertraining.tv, where you will find videos from YouTube.com/supertraining06 and /supertrainingTV. Also, iTunes ratings and reviews. We like those. And thanks so much for hanging in with us for 129.47.
Subscribe to Power Magazine at thepowermagazine.com. If you choose the digital edition, you can catch up on all the great back issues. Take your training to the next level with Slingshot products at howmuchyoubench.net. And look for PSN products including NO Explode at bodybuilding.com. Mark Bell's Powercast is a production of supertraining.tv.